Hello, RAFE. I'm Lisa Ayers, the Director of Communications at the Realtor Association of the Fox Valley, and welcome to the January edition of our new panel series, Real Estate Experience Live. This is a series created by the RAFE Technology and Communications Committee. The goal of this series is to tackle real issues in real estate with realtors. Our plan is to do this monthly, so be looking for this every month. Our topic today is confidentiality and the security needs of you and your client. But before we get into the discussion, I'd like to thank all of the panelists for joining us and for sharing all of your knowledge. And also would like to thank everyone in the viewing audience for joining us. If you have any questions, be sure to put them in the comments and we will get to them as soon as we can. So let's get started. First, we have Justin Letheby. Justin is a 15-year real estate veteran and is also a John Maxwell certified coach, teacher, and trainer. Justin has served on the Technology and Communications Committee for 7 years and was the chair of that committee for 3 years. He also serves on the Education Committee and is a licensed CE instructor and is an instructor for MRED and RAFE. Next, we have Teresa Haish. Teresa is the Associate Vice President and Executive Account Manager with Chicago Title Insurance. Teresa has been with Chicago Title for over 33 years and is one of RAFE's business partners and major investors. She has been the chairperson of the Business Partner Committee and has used her expertise to partner with realtors and all stakeholders in the real estate transaction. Please help me welcome Teresa. So let's go ahead and just get started with our questions. The first question is, how are you keeping clients' information confidential? Justin, do you want to start off with the answer to that one?
Yeah, sure. So this is actually one of my favorite topics. I teach CE class, and one of the most common classes we teach all the time is ethics. And while that is typically a snooze fest, I try to make it a little entertaining by asking an interesting question. And the first question is, ethics 1.9 says we have a responsibility to keep our clients' information confidential. So my first question everybody I ask is always, how confident are you doing that? And everybody says, yep, I'm good. I'm solid. I know what I'm doing. And then I begin to ask a series of questions. These questions go, are you aware you're being surveilled? Are you aware of, and we're going to talk about that one a little bit later, but are you aware that printers are a weak spot for you and your business, right? I ask a series of questions this way because the confidentiality for things we do are hugely at risk, and mostly because we are in a digital world. So in short, without going into a whole hour of what I do for that presentation, is what I'll tell you is this. Confidentiality is not a guarantee today. It's not something that is going to be just guaranteed that's out there. You have phones that are listening every day. You have devices that are around you listening all the time to be helpful to you. But there's a reason why they're answering when they're answering. And that's because of listening. So let's just start there with the phones. Your phones are listening at all times. When you sit there, and I will, you'll hear it here in a second if I say it. If I say, okay, Google, phones go off. And it'll ask me what I'm doing. And it's listening to me right now. It's going to repeat me here in a second. You're going to hear it over the stuff. It's going to do that stuff. Apple's the same way. All of them do the same thing. The reason that's happening is they are listening. And they are always trying to know when to react. The problem is not only they're listening, they're recording. So if you actually go back into your history log, you can actually see all the conversations you have. So that's the first thing on confidentiality. I don't want to jump too far in this, but I'll let Teresa talk a little bit about that as well. She's aware of anything on there from that stuff. But that's the first thing. Confidentiality, as far as that goes, is just that's one thing. We'll talk about printers here in a second.
So I guess just a few things that I thought I'd mention. The question was, how are we keeping client information confidential? So from a title company perspective, we are held to the same security standards that lenders are, which means when it comes to your information, the information of your client, the consumer, we have to preserve and protect the integrity of all personal non-public information. So I think it goes without saying that our systems are equipped with encryption. We all should be familiar with encryption, use it in our businesses, and know when it should apply to the communications you're sending to and from your clients and when you can get by without it. We are continuing as a company to upgrade and update those security systems. The hackers, for lack of a better word, those that are out there to do harm to you or to your clients, they, to them, this is a business. So they continue to evolve and upgrade, which means that your business also needs to continue to evolve and upgrade to protect the integrity of the transaction. And so you can take comfort in the fact that we're doing that. We have a team of people that are our people, as well as we work with other vendors to make sure that those layers of encryption, and that's really what it is. I guess if I could equate this to, think of an old castle, how the castle, oh, how appropriate, because, oops, there it is. There's our logo, which is a castle. Didn't plan that. But if you think of a castle and they had a lot of layers for someone to break through before they made it into the castle and could kidnap them. Right. And we do kind of the same thing. So we have tiers, and as someone breaches the first level, a series of alarms, so to speak, will go off. And then our people and our vendors can work to stop that before they get to the next one. If they happen to break a second, there's a layer of those security protections in place to guard that information. Now, that's just kind of the technology side of what we do. Beyond that, of course, there's the human element, which is, I think, Justin, you'd probably agree, where the biggest risk is in today's environment. Because we all feel, just like Justin said, we're safe. It's not going to happen to me. It's not going to happen to my clients because I'm all over this, right? It doesn't matter how aware of the issue, the wire fraud or compromised communications, we might be aware of the issue. But sometimes it's a simple mistake. It's an email that looks legitimate because these people are really good. And I know we're going to get into that stuff later, but they're really good. So you need to make sure that you and your staff, your team members, are aware of what they should be looking for, because red flags now aren't always bright red. It could be kind of pinkish. And you think, gosh, that looks legit. So I'm just going to click this. That ongoing training for our team and for your team is something that I would encourage. We not only have the training, but we also have testing. So our people are subjected to what looks like an attack or what looks like a phishing email or a spoof. And if depending on if you click it or you don't click it, corporate knows. And you're either commended for having noticed or that's a training opportunity. And so I think it's a great way to just make sure you're staying on top of it. I would close just this question by saying, please be watchful. If you need, I have a quick handout that I'm happy to send to any of you, which just shows some of those red flags for you to look for. They're very easy. You can hang it in your office, give it to your team members so that they at least stay on top of what they should be watchful for. Thank you.
That would be great. That handout would be great. And I can go ahead and add it when I post this. Because what we usually do is we put, you know, we're obviously on Facebook right now. And then I also send it as an email to our members, and I can post it right below that. That would be great. I actually have a question. So when it comes to confidentiality, I know we do so much from our phones these days. What would you say is a safer, I don't even know if this is something that you can answer, but what do you think is a safer way to deal with all this, on your computer at home or on a phone?
I'll be honest with you. It doesn't matter. They're all devices, right? And they're all being tracked at some point in time or another. They all have what are considered key logging or spyware that's in the system to begin with. So the first thing you have to do is you have to be, going back to Risha's comment, you have to sit there and be mindful of what you're doing. You just can't go randomly load an app, right? My favorite conversation with agents is, my kid wanted to play a game and now I can't access my computer anymore, right? Because they downloaded something because it looked great. Their friends say use it and it was not a good thing. And now they got stuff in it all over the place. So that's the first thing. When you just got to know what you got to do, and I'll be honest with you, you look at my computer, I don't have antivirus on my computer. I don't have spyware. I don't have that stuff on here. I don't have it on here because I know what I do. I go through and I have a very critical process. I go through what I'm not allowing and what I'm going through. Does it make me a little bit vulnerable? Sure. Not enough for me to worry about it. What I will say, going back to what Teresa said, if you're going to do these things, you need to find encryption-based solutions for your communications, right? So there are plenty of tools out there that will do that. We can talk about them now, we can talk about them later. That's all your guys' choice. But those are the solutions you got to look for, right? Because everything, there's a stat out there, something crazy, that essentially, if your email isn't hacked, the one you're emailing to is. And it's the way to basically look at it. How do you communicate? Where do you communicate? These are all personal steps that you got to take place to make that happen. I don't think it matters, phone, computer, tablet. I don't think any of that stuff's going to change that stuff too much. I do think you're getting more and more things from the phone, in all due candor. I think you're getting that to happen, but I don't think it's going to stop there. I don't think there's a better solution.
And I would agree that we are all mobile today, especially this year, right? In 2020, we all learned how to be mobile if you weren't already working at some capacity on a mobile level. So I agree that we all live and die by our devices, especially in the real estate space, right? You're always on the move, whether you're going to a showing, whether you're taking a buyer out, you're never really in one place. So I think I would hedge on what platform are you most comfortable on? And the reason that's important is you need to be able to see the messages, to see those red flags I mentioned before. So if your phone is small, and if you use the phone, because we all live on it, but you find sometimes that you can't see the full message, or you're not involved on this, or we're not actually reading the email, we're scanning the email, I would try not to click links, and I would try not to put myself at risk on a device where I might quickly or inadvertently click something because the screen is too small. So there are some things I don't do on my phone. I can see emails, and I will specifically leave things marked as unread or go back and mark them as unread because I want to look at that on a bigger screen, whether it's my iPad or whether it's my desk. Just depends on where I am and what I'm doing. So I think that you should each just kind of review where are you most comfortable, and then pick that device. You don't have to respond to every email. I know you feel like you do. You don't have to respond to everything within 30 seconds. I will tell you that short time span is one of the, shall I say, weapons or one of the tactics that scammers and spammers, whoever they are, will use. There, if there is an urgency, a sense of urgency that seems unrealistic, it probably is. That's usually a really good first sign that something's wrong. So don't feel that you can't let that email wait for 5 minutes until you can get to your desktop, or an hour. And if you're really concerned, you could click reply, but I would encourage you to check the email address that it came from to make sure it's really who you thought it was. You don't want to begin communications with someone who isn't who you think it is. So if it looks a little sketchy or you're just not sure, wait. I also wanted to add one comment. Sorry, my notes are down there. Google. Hello. Google has everything. Trust but verify. So if you are unsure, I like Justin mentioned those apps, I have reviewed everything. And some reviews, you have to take them with a grain of salt because people always post the negative stuff and not the good stuff, but they will also post the unethical stuff. They will also post your opportunities of risk. Don't hesitate to check before you download something. Waiting a little bit can probably be your best defense in some cases.
Pause. The pause is one of the best things you can do. Mm-hmm. You know, statistically speaking, from a trainer who teaches people how to convert leads versus how to do this stuff, you know, statistically speaking, you got to respond in the first 3 minutes. But here's the thing, have a system in place, because as Teresa just said, they are so sophisticated today that they know how to get in there and hit your hot button. So you're going to click on a link you shouldn't have clicked on. And
that's the goal.
That's what you don't want to do, because once you click on that and you do it, you know, it's what's called phishing scam, P-H-I-S-H, where they're looking for your information. They'll make everything look real, like the page that they want to go to, but it's not. It's an overlay that's now just recorded all your information. So you want to be very, very mindful of that. And while you got to respond quickly, have a system in place. You know, say, okay, I'm going to do this, or partner with somebody, or do something. Because, and then really the other part of that is use logic, right? So one of my favorite emails right now that goes out all the time to people, and I see it all over Facebook, about, I got this lead, I don't know what to do. And the lead is this: I'm very interested in buying properties in your area. Right? Your area. Great. I have many areas. Which one is this? Right? Your area. Can you please download my requirement sheet? Oh. So in case no one here is understanding the joke here, your area, they don't know your area.
I know some of those things, they just really, I mean, the one that I've been getting lately is for money, like from someone in my contacts, you know, like, and they get really close. They get one of your people that you're constantly talking with. So you're thinking to yourself, oh my goodness, is this person really in trouble? Like they'll say something like, I'm in trouble. I need, and it's a very specific amount, like $1,523.23. Can you please send that to me? And I'm, you know, yeah.
2 years ago, I bought a phone. 2 years ago, I bought a phone and I was getting a rebate back the way I bought it from Verizon. I got an email that said, here, by the way, to get your rebate, you need to click on this link. And the amount was not exact, but it was darn close. Now I know better, right? I'm going, okay, that's first place. That's not how they work. So I'm not worried about it, but I'm sitting there going, whoa, how? I mean, was that just, now it could have been just pure luck, but for me, the timing and the stuff of that is uncanny how and that stuff works.
That when you, that's absolutely true. And most of us, again, we started with this. Nobody thinks it's going to happen to them. But when a hacker gets into your system, they're, I imagine it is different levels of information that they want from you. And one of them is your contact. So they can do that, which I would almost call a minor scam. Like I, and my pastor has emailed, minor texted my husband and emailed, looking for gift cards. You know, they need gift cards for blah. That's typically a scam. Most people are not going to ask you for payment or anything else in any sort of gift card. But they have access to your contacts. And that should be concerning. That means you've been hacked. If they've got your contacts and they're sending information to your friends, your business associates, stating that it's you, either you've been hacked or they've somehow got access to your database. Maybe it's on Facebook. They can see who your friends are there. But they put together this vision of your life and of your contacts. And so that when they reach out, the verbiage and the request could have been real from, in our case, the pastor that came to my husband. Except I knew him and I texted him. I knew it wasn't him. But they're getting really good at asking for those things. And we really do need to protect our data, which even can just be our contact list. Think about all of the personal cell phone numbers you have in your contact list, the personal email addresses. And each one of those is another opportunity or a doorway for that hacker or scammer to reach your contacts.
You know, you mentioned something interesting there, Teresa, because I think one of the things is fascinating. This happened, I don't know, 3-4 years ago now, where I don't think it was LifeLock, but it was a company like LifeLock that was really doing identity protection. And they sit there and said, I will pay anybody $1 million if they hack my account and we don't get it.
Right? I saw those commercials.
And what was funny was, the way LifeLock type companies protect themselves is there's alerts all over the place for this stuff. But that means it's too late, right? A lot of times it's already too late. So, but what these people did that hacked into the account is what they did was called social hacking, right? So what they did is they're stalking you on Facebook, Twitter, Google, TikTok, whatever. They're following you. And they're learning all the things because we are quite literally telling our lives, hey, I just was on this vacation in Panama. It was amazing. Or I'm going on vacation in Panama. You know, whatever these things are, we're telling our life stories. And it's fun, right? Because we get to share our life with our friends through Facebook. Mm-hmm. So what this group did, learned enough about this person, they called Apple. They had a female call Apple. And they go, I need to get my husband's ID. He has lost his phone. He's overseas. He's, they nailed everywhere he was at. They got all these things. They're talking about where he was at. And they put recording of babies crying in the background. So they added and they amped up the hysteria. So it was stressing out the person on the other line. And the person finally gave in and gave the password. Once they gave the Apple password, they had access to everything. It's fun. I mean, again, that sounds scary. But that's how sophisticated it is. Now, I'm kind of chuckling about it because the reason they did that was because there was a $1 million challenge on the line. So, hey, kudos for them. But, you know, there used to be a website when it was just really Twitter out there that said, come rob me. And the whole point was that website was not to sit there and say, come rob me, but to show people what you're putting out there. So it would literally lay out the time frame of when people could come and get at your house because you told them what you were doing so precisely. And it was, I mean, it's crazy. So, you know, again, not to scare us, not to sit there and tell you what to do. We're going to tell you tips and tricks at the end of how to satisfy some of this stuff. But just understand that hacking and confidentiality is simply more than worrying about what's on the email, more than what's on your phone. Going back to what Teresa initially said, it's really what we do inside here and the personal decisions that we make and how we're handling our day-to-day business. And to be honest with you, things we should be teaching our clients to handle their day-to-day business. The last thing you want to do is go to the closing table, find out that they recently were hacked and they don't even have the funds anymore to close the table. Not even the wire fraud. I'm just talking, they don't have the ability because they were hacked.
Absolutely.
So go have a drink right now.
Yeah. Just going to say, talk about not scaring us, but you know, but it is, it's a real thing and it's really out there. You really do need to be aware and, you know, just think about who could potentially be listening, who could potentially be seeing this. Whenever I'm on my phone and I'm doing something important, I always just kind of take a moment and look around. where am I? What Wi-Fi am I? Could I be hooked into all that kind of stuff? You know, just looking, who could be, are these people looking at me? You know what I mean? Like, are they looking at
the camera right behind me?
Yeah, exactly. Which actually brings us into our next topic. Great segue, Teresa. we wanted to touch on this panel, the topic of surveillance. Are we being surveilled? How do we know if we're being surveilled? And not only with our phones and in our business dealings, but when we walk into a home and we're showing a home. So, Justin, I don't know if you want to start off that discussion.
So I will start off with a couple examples because this is what you got to keep in mind for this stuff. So the first one I'll start off was with a New Jersey murder. There was a murder in New Jersey and that's not the surveillance part, but what happened was the police about 3 months after that subpoenaed Alexa that was in the house. They subpoenaed Alexa because they knew they had all the recordings and the Alexa was in the room where the murder happened. So right now, I don't know where it sits now, but initially the courts, the judicial system actually approved for that to be pulled and subpoenaed. There has been an appeal. I thought the appeal won, but it's been back and forth a little bit. I don't know where it stands, but the whole point is not about worrying about that, although that will come into play for us down the road, is that they're listening, right? So we have this. And people, more of the day, they have these devices, Alexa, Google, that are listening, giving you speakers and doing this stuff and automating your house, which makes life awesome for you, but it comes at a risk because all that stuff is being recorded. The next story I'll give you, I find funny. I was teaching a class. I told about that story and someone said, oh yeah, they didn't name clients. They said, but one time there was a client of mine who was on the listing side and they were sitting outside. The buyers were sitting outside after looking at the home. The seller or the next buyer came in, saw the Ring doorbell, waved at it, and then proceeded to talk negotiating strategies on the front doorstep. And since they activated Ring, the sellers now had the whole conversation.
Wow. That's crazy.
Right? So security is out there. And it, you know, that's not even talking about protecting our identity. That's not talking about stuff we just got done talking about. This is just what happens to that negotiation that just happened, right? Your game plan essentially went out the door because we as the agent didn't say, let's take this farther away from the door. And remind you, if you look at most Ring doorbells, they're activated by the cars driving on the road. So as soon as you come in the house, if you're talking on your way up, you've already told somebody something.
Yeah, that's I just needed to pause after that for a second because it's just and when, you know, I don't know if you guys are versed in this, but so as a seller of a home, do you need to disclose that there are those devices in the home or that there are cameras around or anything like that?
If there's actually active intentional recording devices, it has to be identified.
Okay.
But the problem is where the conversation lies today is Alexa and Google and active listen, you know, intentional active listening device. The argument goes both ways. What I recommend for most sellers, if they have anything in there, I mean, technically, if you leave your phone in, it's listening, right? Mm-hmm. So the way I encourage most sellers and most agents to encourage most sellers, you just put a flyer in the front of the house, put it at the doorstep, whatever you want to do, saying that, you know, this home has recording devices. It's just, it's a protection, right? Not do it. It's simple, right? And if you have any kind of intelligence built into your home, it's something you want to do.
Well, I also, and I just had a thought that I wanted to add because it didn't kind of come up where, Justin, you're absolutely right. We are stalked and tracked more than we probably have any idea. And most of it's because you allowed it. It wouldn't be harmful to go through your device, particularly your phone, but don't forget your tablet if you're carrying that around and see what you've allowed to track you. How many times have you gone to Google and you look something up, or you want to go to a website and it wants you to add those cookies so that we can see where you are? Well, they don't want to just see where you are right now. You've allowed them, in most cases, to track you even beyond that initial Google search that you're doing. So once a week, you know, while you're sitting down on a Saturday morning with your coffee, or maybe you're at your open house while you're waiting for, you know, your partner to show up or someone to come look at the house, just take a few minutes and run through what you're allowing and what you're not allowing. And you might want to restrict some of those. Just a thought.
That's a great idea to just get it, make that part of your general practice to just, you know, every Sunday in front of the football game or something, you know what I mean? Just, you know, just be deleting those things.
Well, all our pictures
are
geo.
Back on.
Yeah. All our geos are geosynced. Mm-hmm. So when you take a picture and you don't, you know, you take a picture of a home, it's actually geosynced, which I think is interesting. I mean, there's no laws that I'm aware of, but I do suspect that will be a law at some point in time because now you've done that and you've given that away. And, you know, the other thing to talk about as far as surveillance goes, think about this the other way. We let Matterport in homes, which is a 3D visualization software, right? It literally 3D scans the home. And people can literally walk through the house now virtually. So what have you, I mean, I love it. I love the tool. I think it's a huge pro for real estate, but I think you got to have conversation with your clients because here's the conversation that you need to let you know. For anybody that is quote unquote a bad guy, you have now let them practice run how to get through the house.
And see what's in it.
Yep. So more than ever, you need to make sure that house is clean, right? You don't have any of those things that are going to tempt that stuff. So, you know, tracking, we were just talking from Lisa, what you're talking about is inside the house, but we're actually building some of that stuff when we're actually taking the pictures and going video and all that stuff we're doing. The, you know, the pandemic has made this a little bit more interesting, right? We're all MRED agents in here and, you know, we can do videos, but what we also do in open houses, we can do live video. Well, now you're recording the house. Again, you're recording that situation out there. And potentially, I'm not saying it is, but there's a potential risk that comes into play with that. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm not here to scare you. I know it sounds horrible. And trust me, guys, I know we're feeling the energy go higher, 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 higher. I promise at the end, we'll alleviate that. I have plenty of tricks. I know Teresa has plenty of tips and tricks with this as well that we'll get that done. But I think it's important to understand that you got to look at this with a constructive eye.
And it's just eyes wide open, knowing, you know what I mean? Knowing that it's there. I mean, I think that some people on here might be listening to this and saying to themselves, oh my gosh, I didn't even think about Matterport. I didn't even think about the fact that like now they've got a, you know, didn't even think about those things. So it's good to know those things. I mean, you definitely don't want to be caught on the other end of not knowing, you know? So
Teresa? Can I ask a question? I guess I don't know the answer to this because I'm not familiar with Matterport or those videos because, you know, title isn't selling real estate. When you post those videos, do they live forever online?
Technically, unless you remove them.
Okay.
And that's that perfect question because that's exactly what I was going to say. And that's the problem. If I was the buyer of a home, the first thing I would demand and request, and some buyers are actually doing it from the pictures, but I would demand all the videos and all that stuff be taken offline. You know, it's just a security risk. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if, again, as far as confidentiality goes, now we have a walkthrough of the house.
Mm-hmm. And that's a great thing to, another thing to put in practice is once the contract goes through to just take those things off, because now they don't have the lockbox to protect the, you know, to protect the entry to the house. And so, yeah, that's another great thing to just kind of put in your general practice is that, you know, when everything's through and everyone's moved and in their spots, like just take those videos off, because that's a great tip as well.
And what a great way to follow up if you're a buyer's representative. I always imagine that agents are looking for a really good reason to reach back out to the client. You don't want to maybe have that conversation, maybe when you're doing the final walkthrough, but they've got a lot on their mind that day and then they'll be moving. So, you know, 10 days, 7 days after they've moved in, what a great time to just touch base, make sure they're happy. And hey, do you want me to reach out to the listing agent to get these removed? I don't know, is there a form that you need them to sign to make that request? Just wondering if that wouldn't be a great business practice.
Well, that is a good question. And that's something that would have to be looked at the association level and at the broker's level, having a form built on that level. That's a good question. I haven't thought about that one. Yeah. But because I think it'd be easy, right? Just one of the forms you have at the closing, at the contract, by the way, all this stuff were removed at the closing date type of thing.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Because then it just becomes almost like you're not, like, it's one less thing you have to think about. If it's in that packet, you're just not, you know what I mean? It's just, yeah, I love that. I will take notes on that.
From the non-realtor in the room.
Association thing. I will definitely take notes on that. So what do you think? Are we ready to move on to another topic about email weaknesses and wire?
I just want to say two things on this, because it's something that always kind of makes me chuckle with this, is two things. And Teresa mentioned the first one, Wi-Fis. Now, we're not today. We're in a pandemic world. So we're doing 90% of our work from home in our own trusted Wi-Fi. By the way, don't trust that by default. Make sure you have the proper passwords and stuff built into that. Totally long conversation we're not going to get into today, but make sure that is well protected. But really, Wi-Fi's come into play when you talk about going publicly, right? Going to my favorite second office, Starbucks. Which, by the way, exactly.
I'm so glad we're talking about this, by the way, because I think this is the thing that people, like, at least myself, this is the thing that I like. That's what I was saying before. I'd like look around, like, am I comfortable with all these people sitting here having all my information, you know?
That's not the risk, right? The risk isn't them like walking past and seeing you type, because there's all sorts of gray out screens that you can have and stuff like that, which are great to have. The risk here is when you log in, you go to these public Wi-Fis, there are what are called man in the middle attacks. These man in the middle attacks will actually look like you're logging into the Starbucks Wi-Fi. And you're not. You're getting access to it, but you're logging in and they're collecting everything. They're watching every word you write, every credit card you type in. Everything you go is going through that public Wi-Fi, which is not public. The biggest thing I can tell you with this is you got to have a discerning eye. Now, again, I know tips and tricks and we'll follow this back up at the end, but the biggest thing you do when you walk into a Starbucks, if you see somebody with two laptops up and a big quote unquote phone charger, get out. It's not a phone charger. It's a big old hard drive. So that's where it's at, right? And I'm going to tell you some other tricks in here that can even circumvent that. And by the way, the first location that is horrible is airports. It's the busiest location in the world. They're always hacked, always hacked. Second location is coffee shops, Starbucks most commonly, because it's everywhere, right? It's almost on every third corner you have. But the next worst place for us is when we vacation is hotels. So just because you're in a hotel and you're quote unquote on their Wi-Fi, the odds are hardly ever that you are on their Wi-Fi unless you're hardwired in. Just as a tips.
Good call.
Well, and with hotels, and I would also include in their Airbnbs. We just stayed in an Airbnb and they had two computers for us to use and like gave us all the Wi-Fi passwords and all that kind of stuff. And we're just like, why are they making this so easy for us to come and use and work here? We're here on vacation. You know what I mean? And so that was a big red flag to us that we're just, you know, told all the kids to get off the Wi-Fi, just use, you know.
Don't plug in to the USB cords in those areas either.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because the problem is what most people forget is USB cords are data and power. Mm-hmm. So I actually had someone at a Starbucks one time come in and ask me for them to charge their BlackBerry. Now, this was long ago, so BlackBerries were still there, but they weren't prevalent, right? That person specifically. So I had a, like we all do, we have a mind blank. I just said, sure, I'm a helpful person. I'll charge it for you. And I started to put it into my computer and I went, that isn't right. So she went and sat down away. Didn't even sit near me. Clue number one, right? You're trusting me on your device. Two, she sat away. So what I did is I always carry a second charger, right? It's kind of like the old gentleman's club, right? You had to have that cigarette lighter to be a gentleman to, you know, do that. I always have a second charger. I gave it to her. I said, you're welcome to use it. When you're done, just bring it back to me. She sat in the thing for about 5 minutes and got up and said, it's not working. I went, oh, I know that's crap, but she was trying to hack my computer.
Right there at the Starbucks. Again, not trying to scare people. Like I said, trying to give information, but it's just, you know, yeah.
And again, we're going to talk about some solutions more specifically, but there are, you can actually either make or buy power only cables.
And I think awareness, I know, Lisa, you mentioned, gosh, we're not trying to scare you. And we're truly not. Although those of you listening might, you know, I hope you're still drinking coffee and nothing a little more stiff than that.
Scotch.
But, oh, right. Awareness is really the key, because that's the first line of defense, if you will, is if you're aware of the issue, hopefully your eyes are just maybe a little more cautious and they're looking for some of those loopholes. Again, trust, but verify. It could be absolutely legitimate. But check it out. You spend that extra 10 seconds looking at the email. I have gotten emails or texts, and I will either text or call the customer because I'm questioning it. Some of you listening may have been those people. I will question something just doesn't look right or feel right. And sometimes it is right. It was just a series of whatever. She doesn't like me. You know, she doesn't always translate things the way we intend her to. But the 30-second phone call I made or the text to just verify has never let me down.
It's worth it. One last thing, we'll go to email. Printers. Okay. We all in offices have what are called biz hubs. All got biz hubs. Well, here's the thing with biz hubs. They have a big old hard drive, right? When you copy a paperwork, you fax something, you're not faxing from the piece of paper. You're scanning it to the hard drive and then it's doing whatever it needs to do. It's a big computer. So a lot of offices will have, you know, protocols for security, you know, security purposes for their agent. They got to come in, they got to give the ID so we know who we're talking to, who we're dealing with, right? And totally get that and respect that. But the problem is now you have a collection on a hard drive of all those IDs, IDSA, right? So what people did, now it really didn't happen to real estate. It happened to attorneys a while back ago. What people were doing was going to the junkyards where all these printers were being held and taking the hard drives out. And they weren't cleaned beforehand. It was like a $3 billion ID theft program that went out a few years ago. I don't know if it was that number, but it was huge. It was a huge number. And so again, all you got to know for that is have a plan in place. So when you're working with that leasing company, you know what they are doing with those things once you change over to the new product. So don't worry about it. Have a plan. So that's the last thing I always talk about to make sure people do, because again, for me, it's, I don't want me or my client spending weeks, years, months trying to get all that stuff figured out because of something that could be prevented.
Absolutely. Those are great tips for sure. Okay. So let's get into it. Let's get into it. Email and wire fraud. What do we need to know about this, and how can we help prevent it? Teresa, do you want to start off with that?
Sure. So what is it? It is a multi-billion-dollar business. And I don't use that word lightly. There are literally countries in the world where it is a business. It is unethical, it is inappropriate, and it is still stealing. But to them, it is a business. So what you need to know and what your clients need to know is that there are people who get paid a lot of money because they make a lot of money because they get a lot of money through wire fraud and compromised communications. So I'll go back to kind of where I started. So as a title company, we are held to the same standards that lenders are, which is to protect and preserve the integrity of communications with consumers. Nothing is more important than protecting that money. Well, I shouldn't say nothing, but there's very little that's as important as protecting your client's money and making sure that it gets to where it's intended to go to. There are a lot of steps that hackers and those who are seeking to get their hands on that money will implement to insert themselves into a transaction with the ultimate goal of being a part of your conversation. So that as you get to closing and it's time to now send those funds, it makes sense for this person, this email address, to insert themselves and get wire information to your client. Your client listens to that. That's where the risk lies, is that once they send those funds, typically in my experience, those funds are wired to a bank that's still here in the US, but briefly, they will be whisked out of that account as soon as possible and sent overseas. And once that happens, it's very unlikely, highly unlikely, that those funds will come back. In some cases, it can take a long time to get the funds back, even if you've stopped it before it goes offshore. It can still take weeks and more weeks to get those funds back, or even a portion of those funds back. You may not get all of those funds back. So I say that again, I'm not here to scare you. Justin and I are not looking to do that, but what we do want you to do is to just take a minute and slow down and maybe review the communications and the business practices that you have in place so that the consumers are protected, because it's their money. Yes, there was a while that they wanted your commission, and I don't know, Justin, I don't know, Lisa, if you guys are still seeing much of that, and they will still get your commission if they can insert themselves that way. But more often than not, it's those funds that are coming to closing, cash to close. That's what they want. So what is it? I think I've defined it. Two, do you need to be concerned about it? Absolutely, we all do. And that goes back to where I mentioned looking for those red flags. So someone can hack you and be watching your email for 3 months before you even have a viable closing that they can insert themselves into. The difficulty is often we don't know when someone has hacked an email system or they've hacked your contacts. You don't know when someone is trying to do that social engineering that I think it was Justin you mentioned, where they're looking at your Facebook. They might be looking at what you're doing on Twitter. They might be looking at all of the social media facets of your life. And then they're trying to put together what makes sense. How can I make myself sound like Teresa Hayes versus Chicago Title? So that when I insert myself into the conversation and I'm talking to the attorney in the transaction or I'm talking to the realtor, I can still sound like that person so that the communication looks legit. And how many of us, and I'll include myself, how many of us actually look at the sender on an email? Justin, I know you do. I do a lot. I encourage you to do that, especially if you're not sure or if a communication, maybe you've been doing a back and forth reply. And all of a sudden you've got a new email that's been started, check that. Also, it's important, I think, to check your, Justin, you might know where they keep this, but I've heard of some of the hackers, they'll create a filter system within your email.
Oh, yeah.
And then what they do is they filter out emails that have certain verbiage or certain, whatever they're looking for, whether it's a social security number, whether it's the word wire, maybe it's funds, cash to close, commission, a closing, they'll be looking for any of those terms. And before you even see the email, it's whisked out of your email inbox and put in this folder so that they can read it first and so that they can communicate as you. Meanwhile, you have no idea that this communication is going on, but they will send information to your client or to other parties in the transaction. Sometimes they'll put names in. We had a Betty White that apparently worked at Chicago Title, and it wasn't a Chicago Title email address, but they will insert names and try to make it look like they're including all of the appropriate parties, but they're not really legit emails. I don't know how much more you want me to go on to. Justin, do you want to pop in?
The only thing I'll add in there for this is they are getting more sophisticated. One of the easiest ways to identify emails that weren't real is the grammar was always off, right? The written word was always off. The problem is right now is with that trick that Teresa's talking about, what they're doing is putting it into the spam folder, because we don't look at our spam folder. And now it goes in there and now they can look at it at will, because that's all they're looking at, because they know what's in there and they're looking for that stuff and they're learning and then they're waiting for that right filter. So really the quick fix for that is change your password. They're done. They can't get in that part anymore.
Change them frequently.
But the second thing with that is they're getting better, unfortunately for us. They're getting better with the grammar. And now they're not, because they are still another country speaking another language. So they haven't mastered our language. But what they're doing is adding artificial intelligence into their hacking scheme. So the artificial intelligence is learning our language and learning how we speak. By the way, this isn't foreign to any of us, right? When we get emails, if we're using Gmail or even Microsoft now has lately put some of that stuff in there, it's reading your email. They are doing it. We've given them permission to read the email, and then they're going to give you the three most likely responses you give based on what's in the email context. So this isn't unfamiliar territory, but now they have used that AI to actually write the email.
The only other thing I'll add is if that you or your office are interested in any, whether it's through Zoom, some sort of platform, I'm happy to chat with you about what we see. So how our team is trained to look for some of those emails. I'm happy to run through just some tips of the trade regarding spam emails and wire fraud. I think that being prepared for that is a big part of preventing it. And you're going to be entrusted to really help sell that protection to the consumers, because the consumers really, oblivious is maybe a strong word, but they really don't understand the seriousness of the issue. Because again, nobody thinks it's going to happen to them. And everybody thinks that their system that they use is pristine. Everyone is, mine's protected. We all feel that way. And that does then give a false sense of security. And I think that I couldn't afford to lose some of the money I've seen go overseas. And I think that letting your clients know that you care enough about them, their transaction, and making sure that they're safe throughout the process is helpful. I am happy to help you prepare a piece. If it's a marketing piece you just want to put into a packet that you're giving to the clients, I'm happy to help educate you. I'm happy to run through some of the most recent scams that we've seen. We don't have time today to probably do all of that on this call, but if you or your office determine that that would be useful to you, then let me know. I'm happy to help.
And I would definitely take advantage of it. I think one of the required marketing that you should have in your pamphlets, especially a listing side, but even a buy side, is how to identify good emails, bad emails, how to do that. I mean, it's such a huge necessity for our job, and it's a value add for our clients, right?
But you said something. I just wanted to, because you're right. I talked a lot about cash to close, assuming that it was from buyers, but you're right. The seller's proceeds is the other risk point.
Yep.
Where they want that as well. And oftentimes fraudulent wire instructions will come to a type company so that they want those funds sent to that account as well. And then they can shift it overseas. So it's on both ends of the spectrum. Don't think that because you're a seller, you're fine, or because you're a buyer, the lender is taking care of all of that security for you, either side of the transaction. And frankly, everyone involved in the transaction should be taking it seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
Well, and I think that just one thing that I wanted to point out is just me kind of being even doubly removed from the whole situation is what you said, Teresa, that it's a lot of money on the line. And I think that we're all so predisposed to credit card fraud, right? Where someone takes your credit card and they make some charges, and the bank usually takes care of that, right? I mean, they take care of that. Everybody's fine. It's not a big deal. Happens all the time, you know, but this is different. This is a lot of money, and they're not getting that back. You know what I mean? And so maybe in some cases they might be able to recover, but I'm sure, Teresa, you can speak to this. There's probably a lot of cases where the money is gone. The
money is gone. And look at it from this perspective. If you come to me and I'm the bank, you, the consumer, bring to me the wire instructions that you've secured. You have your own responsibility to make sure that you got those wire instructions from a known and trusted source. Doesn't have to be email. And in fact, I will tell a lot of people, don't use email. You can always stop into our office, for example, and pick up the wire instructions for your closing. You can still go to your bank and get wire instructions physically from the bank that you bank with. You don't have to rely on the email. You can still do it in person. And that's a great way to still do it. Personally, that's what I do. I wouldn't wait for email. But you want to have some responsibility, and you need to, because at the end of the day, you brought them the wire instructions that you got from somewhere. You trusted that. So even we tell people, even when you do get the wire instructions from us at Chicago Title, call Chicago Title, and not the phone number that's in the email, but Google Chicago Title Geneva, and then pick up the phone and call that number that you found on Google that's really Chicago Title, and then ask to speak to someone. I've had realtors have clients call me because they know me and they know that my cell number is real. I may or may not have the wire instructions on me, but I can at least get them to a party who can help verify that. Take the 3-minute phone call and verify that the account number and the information that you've got is real and accurate. Because if you bring it to me and I'm sending the wire as your bank, you gave it to me. Why wouldn't I trust you?
Yeah, I want to echo what Teresa just said. Do never call the phone number on the email. It's as fake as what the email was that came out.
Don't even ask for the name of that person. Don't ask for the person that was an email. You can talk to any receptionist in any one of our offices and they will get you to someone, or if they're not available, they're busy, they will get you someone to verify those wire instructions. And I would venture to guess every title company is the same way.
Absolutely. Well, that's great advice. So thank you for that. So I'm kind of thinking that we've touched on a lot of our topics, but I do want to talk about the last thing on our list is solutions. We've been kind of talking about them along the way. But I'm kind of thinking we need to I want to reiterate that point just because we've scared everybody out of their pants so far. No. But, now it's time to talk about what general practices, what things do we do to help to keep this from happening? Justin, you look like you're ready to jump in on that.
So here's the thing I always tell people, right? I get done teaching this particular topic and I teach it within an hour's time frame, and I've watched the energy go up, and I tell them, you know what? I know this stuff, but I'm not worried about it. And I'm not worried about it because I have practices in place that protect me to make sure this stuff doesn't happen. I will go into Starbucks and I will handle my business. There are still certain things I won't do in Starbucks. I won't buy something while I'm in Starbucks. Or I won't do those things over the computer, but there are still plenty of business conversations I will have because I have implemented strategies in place to make this where I am secure and I'm protecting my clients' needs. So just a list of things to kind of talk about with this. I think you should always have kind of a digital safety tool belt, so to speak. The first one is have a VPN. That word stands for virtual private network. It makes me laugh because what VPNs back in the day were physical hardware in front of the company's server wall that you'd have to dial into to get into it. Well, now these are virtual VPNs because these are literally just softwares you add to your computer that will then encrypt you to be end-to-end conversation. So if I log in, even if I'm at Starbucks and I happen to pick the man in the middle attack, they still can't read what I have because I'm encrypted. They can't read it. It's all gibberish to them. So VPN, if you don't want to do VPN, and by the way, you can get free ones, but the free ones are going to sell your data. So you always want to spend a little bit of money, but you can buy it for as cheap as $5 a month. And they're usually really, really solid. If you don't want to do that, then most of the time your carriers are getting a little bit more liberal about your ability to use your phone as a hotspot. Use your phone as a hotspot, right? You be at Starbucks, use that. That's what I do 9 out of 10 times. I'm just using that in there. And I have it set up where not anybody can just randomly log in. They got to have a password. Since I don't give out my password, they're not getting in, and I'm good to go. That's the first one. Power cords. Buy a cord that's power only, or at least buy an adapter that's power only. That way, when you're charging in, you can charge anywhere you want. You don't got to worry about it. If you don't want to do that, have a mobile battery. Right? They're so cheap to buy anymore. They're incredibly cheap to buy. Stop using 123 password. I'm kidding. I know we're not doing that, but we are using my favorite kid's first name and their birth date, right? Which is easily hackable, right? It still cracks me up every year. They come out with a password. Still you know what still the most common password is? 123456. You know what the next one is? 123456789. Right. So don't do that. And I get it, right? I get it. We have hundreds of websites we have access to. We have so many things we got to do that it's hard. And I don't want to have to remember all those passwords. I write the same password every time. By the way, that's the second thing you don't do about passwords. Don't write those same passwords twice. Don't use it twice. So use a password generator, right? OnePass, LastPass, something like that that's out there. I personally like LastPass. I think it's one of the best ones out there, one of the more secure products out there. And it's great. I love that tool. So do that. VPN, encryption. As far as encryption goes, have communication tools that are encrypted, right? Your email is not. You can buy add-ons to have those tools encrypted. I typically don't do that because that requires the other party to want to do that too. And they typically don't. They're not that way. So we have a phone. Lisa mentioned this early on. What is the best device to be? There is no best device, but I think there might be a best communication per device solution. Have an encryption communication device on your phone. WhatsApp is probably the most common one that would fit that category. WhatsApp is a peer-to-peer conversation. People cannot read it. This was built in India. And by the way, if you don't know of where not to be with a mobile device, it's India. I'm just saying it is one of the most hacked countries out there. That is not saying anything other than that. It's one of the most, and that's why WhatsApp was built the way it was. The person that built it because he was in a different country and he wanted to be able to commute with his family, but he wanted to do it in a private communication. He built it for security protocols. It's still one of the best tools out there to be used. There's other ones. Telegram's another example of that. There are plenty of tools along those ways. As far as your printer goes, again, know what your hard drive is and know what the leasing company that you're leasing from does with that hard drive. That also goes with your computer, by the way. Delete does not clean out your hard drive. Just saying. Have those solutions in place. I think I hit those. Anything while I'm brainstorming here, Teresa, that I forgot?
Yeah, I had a few things I wanted to add, which is one, I said it before, I'll say it again, don't shy away from in-person voice-to-voice contact. I know during COVID, you may not get as many in-person contacts as you'd like, but when it comes to closing and communications about funds, one, if you're a realtor, I would remove yourself from those conversations. Why expose yourself to the business risk of somehow being involved in exchanging wire instructions? So let your clients know that you will never be getting wire instructions from me as your realtor, because they really shouldn't. Direct them to where they can get help. Once you find out where they are closing, get your client a good contact and a phone number. Again, don't use a phone number in an email, but if they get one from you while you're meeting with them, hey, Teresa's my girl at Chicago Title, here's her phone number, here's the general office number. You've given them something in person that they can know and that they can trust. It isn't a compromised communication because it's me. You physically see me. And then the second, if you can't do it in person, is do it voice to voice. I would venture to guess that as realtors, you frequently talk to your clients when they're looking at homes or they're listing their home. Thinking they want like a weekly check-in, something like that. So you know their voice. They know your voice. That voice-to-voice conversation is another way of identifying the parties and making sure that you're exchanging information with a known and trusted party. Other things I want to mention is encryption. I know that Justin mentioned it, but multi-factor authentication, MFAs. I know it sounds like, ugh, who wants to think about that? But if you do online banking, you most likely already participate in a multi-factor authentication. That's what we use at the title company. You will get a text code to make sure that it's you. So you'll try to log in and you'll retrieve an item or a PDF or something. And then in order to get into the system, it will have to text you so to make sure that it's you so that you can actually get in and look at it. I set that up on my personal stuff too. Yes, it's a PETA, a nice big pain in the you know what, but it's only a PETA if you're never hacked, but it's well worth the extra work and it's well worth my time to do that just to make sure that I'm protected and my clients are protected. The other thing I wanted to mention, and you know, Justin, that you brought up a good point, your hard drive, that when you delete something, you don't really delete something. So I would encourage you to check with your office or with your tech team to see when you are able to delete things, how can you do that in a manner that's best so that it's really deleted? And I don't know what the answer to that is because I am not a techie. I would bet Justin could probably put together a course, or probably has one, on how to do that. But I would encourage you to really, really look at your data, how you're maintaining it, how you're sharing it, sometimes intentional and sometimes not intentional. But really, it's the start of a new year. take a little time to focus on that side of your business as well, because the ramifications, if there is a breach, are severe.
Yeah, I would agree. I would say, as far as going back to what Teresa said, you don't have to typically worry about deleting something until you're getting rid of that device, right? Your computer, your phone, things like that. You don't have to typically worry about that until you're getting rid of it. Perfect. But once you do, clean it out, right? So what I typically do is I take the hard drive. I don't get any rebate from my computer anyway, so I'm not getting anything from it. So I keep the hard drive and I can do whatever I want with it. But if you don't want to do that, there's software like KillDisk that will do it. And just so you understand, deleting isn't doing it. Empty your trash box isn't doing it. It isn't protecting those things. Because what happens is you're not deleting the data. It's basically a table of contents. At the front of your computer, there's a table of contents that sit out there. It says, here's where everything can be found. And when you delete a file, all you're doing is removing that table of content of that one item. The data is still there. It's just not visible. So what people do is they use what's called KillDisk. And what KillDisk does is essentially write a bunch of zeros and ones, deletes them, writes a bunch of zeros and ones 10, 15 times until essentially there's nothing consumable by that information anymore. Typically what happens. That's usually the best way. I mean, I've seen people try to drill into the computer because if you can break the hard drive, it's not going to be usable, but there's hacks around that. So best is just to erase it. I just keep them. I don't have a problem with that.
Thank you.
Those are great. I mean, we've covered a lot of ground here. I feel like we've covered a lot of ground. Do either of you have any last words to, you know?
I want to just take one second, and I think, Justin, I'd be speaking for both of us, that, again, the goal today wasn't to scare you as much as awareness is key. And I hope that we haven't, you know, forced your eyes to glaze over and you've tuned out. And if you've made it this far, God bless you. But if any portion of this concerns you or creates an area of interest where, gosh, I think my team and I need to learn more, I think that, Justin, I'd be speaking for both of us to say, contact one of us. And either if we can't help you, you know, maybe we can put together something for your team, for your office to review it, whether it's on a social platform or a digital platform like this, not social as in Facebook, but we'll create what works for you and what makes for your team. I will send Lisa that kind of red alert flyer to you so you can get that posted. But we're here as a resource, and I call that job security. So call me anytime.
Yeah, I would agree. I'm glad Teresa said that. I'm happy to help. Teresa and I have done this similar things like this in the past. I'm sure we can always find another way to do it again for your office, and happy to do it for you. And don't be bashful. I'm happy to help. That's kind of what I do. And I am the big old nerd, so I know more than anybody has to worry about with this stuff. And I'm happy to make it easy to understand and have a solution in place. I think we all need to have a digital tool belt and a safety compliance program in our business.
Great.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. Thank you, Teresa. Thank you, Justin, for attending this, giving us all this great information, opening up our eyes to all of these things that could be potential hazards and giving us solutions. We really appreciate that. And thank you to all of the viewers who have tuned in. Hopefully you found this very useful. And be sure to tune in February as well. We'll be coming back again in February with a brand new topic as well. So thank you so much and have a great day, everyone.